Hi, everyone. It's Mike. Today, we're talking about a word that most would argue is definitely past its peak popularity, groovy. We'll look at the interesting origin of this word and also why we have seen a resurgence in popularity of the word groovy over recent decades. Let's start with the definition. The most common uses of groovy are standing in for words like excellent, enjoyable, exciting. There are about a million synonyms for groovy, but I'll narrow it down to just a few of my favorites. Awesome, dynamite, cool, primo, radical, righteous, stellar. You get the idea. When you think of the word groovy, you probably think of the 1960s, 70s hippie culture and slang, and there's a reason for that. We can see its peak popularity in print around 1971. The less popular variant spelling of G-R-O-O-V-E-Y reached its peak popularity in 1969. Right around this time, we were seeing groovy being used in advertising and plays and musicals, music. It was all over the place. This word was everywhere in the 60s and 70s. Musical groups like Simon and Garfunkel were telling us we've got a groovy thing going on, which was the flip side to their more well-known hit, The Sounds of Silence, better known as The Sound of Silence. And then 1 year later, Simon and Garfunkel wanted to remind us that they were still feeling groovy by releasing the 59th Street Bridge song, aka Feelin' Groovy. Interestingly enough, we've got a groovy thing going on was spelled G-R-O-O-V-E-Y when it was released, and Feelin' Groovy was released with the more common spelling of G-R-O-O-V-Y. We also had Somebody Groovy in 1966 by the Mamas and the Papas, Groovy People by Lou Rawls in 1976, bands like the Flamin' Groovies from San Francisco who formed in the mid-60s, and even TV programs like The Groovy Show from 1967 to 1970 and a cartoon show called The Groovy Ghoulies, which ran from 1970 to 1972. The term predates the counterculture movements of the 60s in the USA, however, and can actually be traced all the way back to the 1850s. So let's dive in. The earliest uses in print that I, as well as etymonline.com, can find that date back to the mid-19th century are with a literal use, with groovy being an adjective related to a groove, or in other words, a long, narrow cut or depression, especially one made to guide motion. This will be the word we eventually will use to describe the depressions cut into a phonograph record, which we will talk a bit more about in a second. So we were seeing groovy being used just to relate to the surface of something, a groovy surface, quote, groovy surfaces which destroy the circularity of the holes, unquote, is one use I found dating back to 1852. In case you were wondering, the word groove does share the same etymological root that gives us the modern-day use of grave, as in a hole in the ground for a dead body. Both have the same Proto-Indo-European root, which also can be translated to other English words we use today, including dig, bury, and scratch. And in case you were wondering, Proto-Indo-European refers to prehistoric populations of Eurasia and the languages they spoke, all of which had quite an impact on many modern-day languages. A figurative sense of groove has been traced back to 1852, but wasn't associated with anything exciting or good. Rather, it meant you were stuck in a rut, or just that you had a routine. We most definitely use groove in this way in modern English, as well as the phrase being in the groove, which often means you are performing consistently well at something. In case you were wondering, this figurative sense for being in a routine or rut, which in my mind evokes an image of a record needle being stuck in a groove, slowly spiraling toward the center of a record, does seem to predate the phonograph, which wouldn't be invented until the 1870s. Let's talk about the phonograph now. Anyone familiar with vinyl records knows that you must drop the stylus or needle into grooves that have been etched into a flat, round disc. Before it was flat discs, it was wax cylinders. The disc phonograph record was the dominant audio recording format in the 20th century and, of course, is still around today. Groove, to mean the spiral cut in a phonograph record, most likely dates back to the turn of the 20th century. Let's go back to groovy, the slang sense related to excellent or enjoyable, predates the hippie movement of the 1960s, and can be traced back to the jazz scene of the 1930s. According to well-known linguist D. Gary Miller, groovy was adapted as a term for capable jazz musicians who were themselves in the groove in somewhere around 1937. Miller also points out that the more general sense of something being excellent or cool would catch on as popular teen slang by the 1950s. Based on our timeline, it wouldn't surprise me one bit that some of you are making a connection between the rise of groovy as a slang term and the rising popularity of recorded music on disc phonograph records in the 1930s, among which were many great jazz recordings. I'm right there with you. However, according to the book Flappers to Rappers, American Youth Slang by Tom Daltzel, Tommy Dorsey, the famous jazz trombonist and band leader of the big band era, known as the sentimental gentleman of swing, argues that there was no connection between the grooves of a record and the rise of the slang term. Dorsey was quoted in the San Francisco Call Bulletin in 1942 as saying, quote, "When the boys and I hear a good record nowadays, we says it's groovy. Last year, that would have been in the groove." The expression has nothing to do with the grooves on the record's surface. It just means we think it's a fine piece of music, unquote. Perhaps one of the earliest uses in print of groovy as a counterculture slang term comes from Cab Calloway's Jive Dictionary, which was first printed in 1938. Cab Calloway was an American jazz singer, dancer, bandleader, actor, and the man who helped introduce jazz slang being used in the 1930s, particularly in New York's Harlem District, to the general public, with his Jive Dictionary. In the Jive Dictionary, groovy is defined simply as an adjective for fine, with the example, "I feel groovy." Calloway had a long career in jazz and has memorable roles in popular films, including The Cincinnati Kid from 1965 and the 1980 John Belushi Dan Aykroyd film The Blues Brothers, in which Calloway performs his big hit, Minnie the Moocher. Despite periods of semi-dormancy, like in the mid-80s, groovy has never gone away. After the break, we'll talk about more recent spikes in the popularity of this word. Stay with us. Engram, which tracks the use of words in print all the way back to the 1500s, shows a steady increase in use of groovy starting in the late 1980s. That continued to rise in use until its second peak in popularity right around 2010. Remember, the first being the late 60s, early 70s. I have some theories as to why we see this second peak. By the late 80s, we would have had a wave of nostalgia seeping into culture as the aging generation who were teenagers in the 50s and 60s start to look back with rose-tinted glasses at their youth. In 1997, we would see released the first Austin Powers film, International Man of Mystery. In the films, Austin Powers, a man cryogenically frozen for 30 years, is thawed out in the late 90s to defeat his evil nemesis bent on world domination, Dr. Evil. This wildly popular movie and its two sequels, The Spy Who Shagged Me in 1999 and Goldmember in 2002, most certainly helped to reinvigorate late 60s popular culture, including the term groovy. So why the peak in print media in 2010? Well, perhaps taking a peek at the books printed that year will give us a clue. That year, we see books printed that are steeped in nostalgia, But I also kept coming across books referencing a different Groovy. Groovy is also the name of a Java-based computer programming language. All of the programming nerds out there, I'm sure, are familiar with this other Groovy. Groovy 1.0 was released in 2007. For all of you, like myself, who are not programming nerds, it may seem improbable that this use of this term Groovy would have contributed to the peak in popularity we see in 2010. However, in that year alone, we see many books published about this Java-based programming language. For example, an edition of Groovy Programming, An Introduction for Java Developers, another book called Groovy for Domain-Specific Languages, another called Getting Started with IBM WebSphere Smash, which includes sections about Groovy, just to name a few. What do you think caused this second peak in popularity in 2010? Write into the podcast and share your thoughts. Let's peer into the fact cabinet, where I keep my collection of items that always seem to tie into the topic at hand. Ah, here's my worn-out VHS copy of Austin Powers, The Spy Who Shagged Me. As a refresher, this is the one where Dr. Evil builds a time machine and travels back to 1969 to steal Austin's mojo. Many of you probably already know that Mike Myers, who played Austin Powers as an Englishman in the films, is Canadian by birth. But did you know that his parents are from Liverpool? The humor in these Austin Powers films is influenced by his heritage. Myers is quoted as saying, quote, "Austin Powers is everything I watched on TV in the late 60s. My parents were from Liverpool, and there's no one more English than an Englishman who no longer lives there. Every molecule of British culture that came across the Atlantic was tasted and worshipped." Unquote. Ah. Here's my collection of 78 RPM records from the 1920s and 30s. This speed would become the standard RPM speed for phonograph discs until the rise of the 45 and the popular LP 33 and a third speed, which is what is still most common today. Let's put one on the old Victrola, shall we? Well, you get the idea. I have a little fact that ties into last week's fact related to differences in electrical voltage that we see around the globe. Did you know that we see not only differences in voltage, depending on what part of the world we're in, but also differences in hertz? That's right, hertz is a unit of frequency. It measures cycles per second. Around 40 different countries run their electricity on 60 hertz, and the rest mostly are run on 50 hertz. How does this relate to today's topic? Well, this difference in hertz will affect the speed of a motor, including motors used to govern a record player's speed, to 78 revolutions per minute, for example. Peter Copeland of the British Library National Sound Archive has this to say about it. Quote, "Because of electrical mains frequencies differences on opposite sides of the Atlantic, stroboscopic speed testers and synchronous motors meant a nominal speed of 77.922 RPM in countries that used 50 hertz and 78.261 in countries that used 60 hertz. These were later fixed in national but not international standards." Would this make a perceivable difference in how the music sounds to the listener? Well, maybe I'll take my Victrola with me on my trip to Scotland. You see, the USA, where I am now, is a 60 hertz country, but the UK is a 50 hertz country. I'll keep you all posted on my findings. If you know or want to experiment, let us know. Write into the podcast. getthewordpodcast@gmail.com. Before we end today, I want to share a comment that Christian left on the website regarding last week's episode on the word Ben. Super interesting topic and well-produced podcast and episode. Thanks, Mike. Well, much appreciated. Here's also a recent message left for the podcast regarding the episode on My Two Cents.
Hi, Mike. Anya here from Poland. I listened to your podcast about Add Two Cents, and we have a similar proverb in my country, in my language, but we add 3 grosze. Grosze is the same like cents with dollars. So it's fun, especially that I found again that we have some similarities in our languages. You probably remember, like, we talk about payment salary under the table. See you next time and have a nice day.
Very interesting stuff. Thank you, Anya. That's all for today's episode. Write into the podcast, getthewordpodcast@gmail.com. Give us your word suggestions, and I'll take them into consideration for the podcast. Please rate and review this podcast anywhere that you can. It's super helpful. Podcast artwork by Bruno Sanchez. You can find a link to his work in the show notes. Music performed by the Monroeville Music Center. Production, editing, and research performed by me, Mike Butler. Write into the podcast and give us your comments. That email again is getthewordpodcast@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you. Until next time, this is Mike signing off. Welcome to the English Sessions. I am your host and English teacher, Mike Butler. This podcast is for English learners who want to learn English from an experienced educator. I share my passion about language and many awesome topics throughout this podcast. We focus on grammar, pronunciation, structure, and try to have some fun too. There is something for everyone on the English Sessions podcast. Are you a more advanced English learner or a native English speaker? Then you'll enjoy our series called Get the Word. This series is about etymology, the history and origin of words in English. For example, did you know that the word zombie was originally the name of a West African snake god? Join us if you want to improve your English skills. Join us if you are a grammar and etymology nerd like myself. For an archive of resources and much more, go to EnglishSessionsWithMike.com. The English Sessions with Mike Butler, available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and wherever you get your podcasts.